Blog Talk Radio.
Angela Butler. Today's guest is James H. Costin, Jr. Today's topic is about the American Attorney General Eric H. Holden, Jr. This shows by his speech at the American Bar Association annual meeting in San Francisco, California. Hello, James. How are you? Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you, Angela. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Good to have you back.
Good. Thank you. Good to be back.
I'd just like to give you a little bit of history, listeners, in case you didn't know. Attorney General Eric H. Holden, Jr. is the 82nd Attorney General here in America.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Costin, on past shows, we have discussed the unfairness of the criminal justice system here in America for Black Americans and Latinos, and also for women and men. The Attorney General, Eric H. Holden, recently revealed a major change in the criminal justice system. That is why I have invited you back.
Okay.
One of my first questions would have to be, what are your perceptions and thoughts about Attorney General Eric H. Holder's plans about sentencing laws?
Well, what he was basically trying to segue us into was the Smarter Sentencing Act of 2013. And this legislation, it's got a date of July 31st on it, 2013. So it's nothing that's just popping up out of the clear. These guys have been mulling over this law for a little while, and so my perception of it after looking over the actual bill, where there's mandatory 10-year sentences, they've been reduced to mandatory 5-year sentences, and mandatory 20-year sentences have been reduced to 10-year sentences, and that's basically from my preliminary grad school read of this legislation.
Okay. Do you agree with Attorney General Holden about a cycle of poverty, criminality, and incarceration traps too many Americans, especially people of color?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of want to set a precedence for this discussion, though, as it relates to discrimination and sentencing. Racial division did not cause slavery. Conversely, it was a consequence of slavery. Okay, so once slavery was eradicated, the terms associated with race, along with ideologies of racism, took on their own social potency. People have taken it to all kind of highs and to a point where we really don't even understand what the terms mean. But this is, there's always been a racial slant as it relates to drugs in America. In 1903, it was suggested that the Negro and prostitutes were the most likely to have cocaine habits, and as a result, commit crimes. In 1907, in Kentucky, the State Board of Pharmacy began a crusade against drug issues and sold cocaine to Negroes. And I don't know if you know about this term, but there was a term that was penned by I think his name was Koch, Christopher Koch. That last name might ring a bell, but he actually suggested that the attacks on white women were the direct results of cocaine-crazed Negroes. So the effect on cocaine on the Negro's brain was making black men fiend for white women. So this is nothing new. This thing has been an ongoing sore that we've been picking on from its onset. You know, cocaine was widely used. It was not illegal, and it was illegal. It became illegal in 1914. Okay, but to fast forward, in 86, the legislation was passed to allocate $2 billion. That's billion with a B, to the anti-drug crusade, and it was known what population was going to be widely affected. It was known then, and that I think is what you're asking me. Do I agree with the fact that it has targeted a particular demographic? Yes, I do agree with that, and it has basically empowered and incarcerated a particular demographic. Yes, I do agree with that too.
Okay. So do you also believe that the war on drugs, what has this did for this country and the community, the black community, the Latino community, what has this did to us as a country, as also as a race of people, including the Latinos?
Well, what it actually has done, and I want to continue to frame, you know, I'm not making any of this stuff up. I just want to make sure that your listeners understand that I'm not making this stuff up, and I want them to understand where I'm getting my information and where I get my information from. I've been reading up and doing this study for a long time.
You spoke first Africa and many universities.
Yeah, but what it has done in our communities, to get a great overall look at what I'm talking about, or what has happened in our community. Michelle Alexander has written a great book called the New Jim Crow and Colorblind Society, something like that. I can't get to it, but Michelle Alexander is an attorney who's written a book that encompasses basically everything that has happened as a result of this hyper-incarceration of black men. Lois Wacant is another author that I get great information from about how people in poverty have been incarcerated. Okay? And
yes.
So to answer your question about, you know, if people are being incarcerated or if poverty is being answered with incarceration, I would have to agree with, yes, it has been.
Okay. Mr. Holden, the Attorney General here in the United States of America, talked about the prison pipeline and the zero-tolerance school policies. Would you explain to the listeners who may not know, who may be in other countries, how this affected the black and Latino communities here in America? Because there are people listening from everywhere.
The pipeline to prison?
Yes, the pipeline
yes.
to prison and
yeah.
the zero tolerance yeah. and school policy in America. Because there may be other people listening who don't understand what I'm talking about.
Right. Well, the pipeline to prison concept is troubling. There have been, I guess I should say, there is an equation that has been used to determine what percentage of the kids in school are going to go to further their education and what percentage are going to go to prison. All right? That in itself is worth just sitting down and just meditating on a lot. The zero tolerance, whenever you have a zero tolerance, and it's very much dovetails with the problem of our sentencing system as it stands today. Whenever you have a zero tolerance, you don't give the courts an opportunity to exercise the spirit of the law. There is a stubbornness to hold on with whatever the sentence is, and the truth in sentencing. For example, let me first deal with the zero tolerance. If the policy in school is that you should not wear your pants sagging or what have you. And okay, so your pants sag momentarily because you haven't had a chance to pull them up. All right. Never mind the excuse, never mind the reason that you may have for having your pants sag while you were observed. Never mind all that. You would suffer a consequence. Similarly with truth in sentencing. If you have been sentenced with a particular crime or sentenced for a particular crime and the mandatory sentence is 20 years, never mind the fact that this is your first offense, never mind the fact that that you may not even be guilty, that it may be someone else's stuff that was found on you or in your car. Never mind all of that. You suffer the consequences of the sentence without the courts having the opportunity to exercise the spirit of the law. Give an example. Because of the amounts of money that have been allocated by legislature to exercise this war on drugs. As a matter of fact, I think I mentioned in 1986 there were $2 billion to this anti-drug crusade.
Okay.
Imprisonment it transitioned from rehabilitative to punitive. 5 grams of crack carry mandatory sentences of 5 years, while sentencing for 500 grams of powder cocaine carried the same. Which clearly indicates that piece of legislature targeted a particular demographic in our community. Right? And just to give you an idea of what impact those things have had on our society, the ratio per 100,000 adults in 1985, the amount incarcerated per every 100,000 black people were 3,544 compared to 528 white. In 1990, it jumped up to 5,365 compared to 718 white. In 1995, there were 6,926 per 100,000 black people incarcerated compared to 900 and 19 of the white population in America, and those numbers actually look a lot. They expand when we consider the ratio, our demographic weight in America. We are only what now about 13% of the whole population of America, and we have these disproportionate numbers out there like this.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. Attorney General Holden said that the current administration, that's the President Barack Obama's administration, is bringing stakeholders together and providing direct support to address the inequalities that unfold every day in America's courtrooms, and to fulfill the Supreme Court's historic decision in Gideon versus Wainwright. Now, in Gideon versus Wainwright, could you explain that? Would you like to tell the listening audience about Gideon versus Wainwright and what it did for America?
I don't know much about that.
Okay, well I'll answer this one. Okay, it provided that every defendant, he or she, with an attorney that was charged with a serious crime.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe or agree with Attorney General Holden that Congress must end the forced budget cuts that have cut public defenders, hurt public defenders in this nation?
Do I agree with his decision to cut out public defenders?
Not cut out public defenders, but the cuts in the economy and the money for public defenders. Do you think Congress should have did that?
No, I don't think that. Anytime that you eliminate a possibility for an offender or someone who is in court or on trial, anytime you interfere with their ability to be represented, I don't think that's a good thing. I guess to answer your question, no, I don't think Congress should have passed that. I'm not totally aware of all of that, though.
Okay. That was what he said in his speech. Okay. Also, the considerable economic burden, totaling $80 billion. Attorney Holden said, also comes with human and moral costs that are impossible to calculate. And I agree with him on this, and I assume you do too, because you've spoken on this for many years, the unfairness of the criminal justice system. Am I right?
Yeah. Could you say what the attorney? I didn't see the speech. I just read the legislature.
Okay. A lot of people behind bars are there for nonviolent crimes. How do you feel about black male offenders? Also receive sentences of nearly 20%, according to Attorney Holden, Attorney General Holden, longer than those imposed on white males.
Yeah, well, for years that has been the case. I like to use this statistic. Blacks measure 13% of drug consumers, okay, which corresponds normally when we consider or when we examine our demographic weight. But if 33% of the persons who have been arrested are 33% of the people who are incarcerated or arrested are black, and 75% of those incarcerated are black, then those numbers just are not fair. And majority of those guys that I think Attorney General Holder has mentioned has been the nonviolent drug involved offender. I suggest that if many of them had received treatment as opposed to, and I think I did read where he mentioned a little bit about this too, if they had not been under the influence or were not in a state of hopeless mind and body, which is what addiction actually causes. They would not have offended.
Yes,
so, I believe that a lot of those numbers that we're talking about today would change drastically if we address addiction, if we address our social ills as opposed to incarcerating people who are afflicted,
yes,
if you will.
Yes, you got ahead of me. I was going to say that Attorney General Eric Holden here in the United States has said that instead of prisons, there should be community service and rehabilitation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, I mean, okay, let's say for an example, we have a population of people who are incarcerated. And, of course, we have the population of people who are not incarcerated. And some of those who are not incarcerated are, as dreadful as it sounds, they're headed for incarceration. Now, if we address the issues that are him, the actual issues, addiction, if we address that and treat those that have that are afflicted with addiction, then many of them will not offend. Okay. Now, if we address those who are incarcerated and treat them, not once they the ground out here. Now, many of them will actually do the time that they're doing, and all of that time that they're doing, swear off doing drugs ever again, swear off drinking again. But it's a different ball of wax when it gets real when you hit the streets out here. Okay,
yeah.
So if they were able to get the treatment that they needed while incarcerated, and once they get released, continue with that treatment, then they would not recidivate. They would not return to prison, and so we would make long strides at solving these problems with incarceration if we were to address the issues that
treat the issues.
Right. If we were
treat
to
treat the addiction.
Right. Let me say one more thing about we have to keep in mind that what Attorney General Holder is suggesting, and if I'm not mistaken, what he's suggesting is this is at a federal level.
Okay.
Now, I did read that he suggested that the states try to collaborate or do whatever it is that they need to do to make sentencing fair. But the dreadful fact about this all is that some states are just not going to see things the way that Attorney General Holder sees things.
Yes.
I
was going to say, but it's a start. It could be the beginning of the end of something. You know what I'm saying? It's the beginning
of
the end on fairness and criminal justice against people, as Mr. Holden called us, people of color.
Yeah, this is not the first time. This is the reason I said what I just said, but this is not the first time this has been addressed. There was a case, I can't remember the actual name of the case, and if I had my book in front of me, I could actually find, call the name. But there was a young man who was sentenced, a young man was caught with a certain amount of controlled substance and was sentenced fairly by a judge who thought that the disproportionate crack powder cocaine sentencing was unfair. So he sentenced him the way that he would have been sentenced if he had powder cocaine.
Yes.
Okay? And the prosecutor appealed and won his appeal. Okay, so what that says to me is that we're still dealing with ideologies. We're still dealing with mindsets that go way back. And like I said, it's from the onset to set the precedent. You know, we're talking about some people who may not even know that they have race racist ideologies. They may not know that they look at life through racist lenses, and so they think, for all intents and purposes, that their decisions are fair, and I have compassion for them, but in a lot of instances, we have people holding on to these beliefs and ideologies all the way to the end, and so hopefully, Attorney General Holder in this act, from what I'm seeing, most of it is basically a reduction of sentences, there's a controlled substance piece in here that I haven't fleshed out at, but it does look like most of that is more of the same, just a reduction of sentences. But when we step back a little further from just looking at General Holder's press conference and the fact that this legislature is on the floor, we see that there's some other things that may need to be addressed, and hopefully this is the kind of legislation that will bring these things to the forefront, to let people understand that, okay, this is truly an unfair piece of legislation, not legislation, but an unfair law, but there are people holding on to this law as if it is really fair, and that's where we have to start the discussion. But it's a good thing that we're starting the discussion where it is,
but
with the Attorney General.
It's not fair, Mr. Costin. These people have an addiction. Not all of them. Sometimes they're first-time drug users and postulate them for 20, 30, and 15, 40 years and having them work for practically in prison, and some of the prisons are now privatized and on the stock market is loans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not saying things.
Go ahead.
Through rose-colored glasses, but it is wrong.
Yeah, you're right. To add a little bit more to that, and I'm kind of consistent with what we were just talking about. In 1995, 98.4% of those serving life sentences here in Georgia, because of the two strikes and out provisions, are black.
The two strikes out in provision were mostly serving prison time.
Right.
Life sentences were mostly black. Yes, I understand
that. There have been people trying to get that examined for a long time, and that has not been tweaked at all. So what I'm saying is that General Holder's announcement and this piece of legislation, this is one thing, it's one in 13th Congress, first session. So it's actually a piece of legislation that we're working with, but we, like I said, we still have states with ideologies and the state that I was talking about. There was a Pennsylvania doctor who talked about the cocaine craze. Kentucky was where these people wanted to charge and hang pharmacists for selling cocaine to Negroes. Yeah. So we're talking about ideologies, and a lot of people may say, yeah, that was way back then, but you know, I have been taking a look at how grief, trauma, racism can transition from generation to generation to a point where we're not really understanding and not really cognizant of the fact that we are experiencing or living with or suffering from these conditions. And so, it was 1900. Yeah, it was 18th century. 19th century, but you know, this can transition from generation to generation. So we have ideologies that walk amongst us that are being hosted by people who really don't know that they're hosting these ideologies. So
you're saying that these people may not know that they're racist and that their thoughts are racist, their laws are racist. Is that what you're saying?
I'm absolutely saying that there is the possibility that some of us have not totally resolved issues of racism, issues of trauma, and those are the two that I'm thinking that black and white Americans might want to take a look at. And I want to throw in their grief. I have a colleague that is writing who has done research on black American grief. But that's another talk show. I'm saying that there are people who are walking around with issues that have not been resolved, and I'll tell you, I personally experienced this, Ms. Butler, after President Obama got it inaugurated as president. I personally experienced some people who I actually did not think had those ideologies, but once he was elected, I could tell a distinct and complete and almost total, I mean, a total a personality change, and I just, it's like almost as if I didn't know them anymore.
But we as people, as human beings, I understand that about slavery. I understand about segregation. There were laws back then too during slavery and segregation that made things legal, like illegal, I mean, like the right to educate a black person, or teaching a black person to read, to write, to count. You know, those laws were in place there too.
And they were wrong
then, and the laws that they have now, understand that drugs are illegal, that people should not use drugs. But for those who are caught up in that vicious cycle, they need help. They don't need incarceration.
Well, let's talk about those that are caught up in that vicious cycle. The statistics show that majority of the people who are being incarcerated are being they're from densely populated urban areas where the industry of the particular city abandoned them, and so we just have this population that's dense, it's urban, and most of the informal economy is going on outside, which is low hanging.
Yes, because
fruit.
Because they are poor and black or Latino.
Well, you know, when it's hot and you don't have air conditioning, you're on the 16th or 34th floor of a building, you're not going to want to spend a lot of your social time inside. So a lot of this activity is going on outside in the informal economy, and it exists. There is an economy out here that is informal and illegal, but it exists. Okay, so those that are not able to further their careers with the formal economy, they opt for the informal economy. And this happens outside in urban, dense, populated areas, which is, like I said, a low hanging fruit for the policing system, which feeds
But that's discrimination. That's blatant discrimination, because just because they don't have money to fight legally, that's plain old discrimination, like it was back in slavery, like it was segregation.
What what Michael Thornry, who was another scholar on this topic, he says that it was known that drug use was not going to decline amongst the disadvantaged members of urban underclass. Okay, and it was also known that the war on drugs would be fought in densely urban populated communities. Densely populated urban communities, and the arrest and incarceration as a result of this war on drugs was going to be disproportionately people of color. Okay, so yeah, I mean, according to Thornry, now I'm not making any of this stuff up. Now I'm not just pulling this stuff out there, nor am I trying to incite conspiracy theorists out there, but. These things, there's a paper trail, if you will. There is a paper trail. I'm real excited about the fact that the criminal justice system has. But let's take a look at what
you're excited. Okay, I am too because
yeah,
I know there's.
Let's take a look at some of the things that have happened within the last couple of years. You know, this thing about mass incarceration has with the attorney Michelle Alexander's book came out in 2010. So she must have been doing research on it maybe 10 years, 5-10 years before the release of her book. Blackman wrote Slavery by a New Name, and I think that was released maybe a few years before. Attorney Alexander's book was released. A lot of his work, that I have been using has been copyrighted or published in the 2000s. I think the one that I was just reading earlier today was published in 2002. So what has happened is there has been an unrest about this situation with incarceration, and there has been an unrest about all of the other things that the mass incarceration has affected in the Black American community. We haven't even talked about the effect it has on women. We haven't talked about the effect that it has on the mass incarceration of Black men, the effect that it has had on women. We haven't talked about the mass incarceration of Black men and the effect that it has had on kids. We haven't talked about the effect that it has had on the fact that I'm going to try to do what Kant does. The incarceration, while this population of people are being incarcerated, it almost eliminates a market for folks who would do the work out here at the level with the skill set that those who are being incarcerated would be doing. Those who are being incarcerated are... I think the average is like a 10th grade, 11th grade education.
Yes.
Okay. So that, being honest about this thing, there's not even a market today for that population of people. There's not a job market for that population of people. So because the jobs that would have been available for that population of people have been shipped overseas. Now they're trying to bring them back. But that population would have been employed had those jobs not been overseas. Okay, so so now we're looking at we're almost at a point where there's not a market for a high school educated person, just high school. There's almost not a market for high school only educated population. That's the reality. Those are the things that we really need to start taking a look at. And these are the kinds of things that have actually were precursors to this coming out, if you will, about the criminal justice system and the announcement that Attorney General Holder has recently made.
Yes, I understand that. And to address what you said about trauma, there is trauma in the black community. There is from things that have happened over the centuries, over the years, stories that have been passed on, things that have happened recently to black Americans. And I'm not saying that they should all just nothing to get about them. It's just that there are some of us who, how can I put it? There are some of us who are traumatized by the legal system. We have been dealt with unfairly, harshly, cruelly, and we are not counted. It seems like the black people, we as a race, are not counted in certain situations, such as, like you said, the war on drugs. Now, those are people who have addiction. Incarcerating them is not always the answer. Sending them away, locking them up, forgetting about them, and having them work for pennies on the dollar or for free for manufacturers and companies and things is not the answer, because that is a form of slavery.
Absolutely.
That's my opinion.
Yeah.
And it is wrong. Mm-hmm. And for people to turn their noses up and to turn their backs on people, our race of people, we're human, we're all humans, and to say, well, they had no business doing that, they know it's illegal. But you don't know the situation. You don't know if what forced that person to do that, or what got in that person to do that. And I feel like addiction is a sickness. And I know it's kind of crazy to expect America to say, well, these people are sick, they're addicted, you know, because of the history here in America of slavery, of segregation, of being bought from Africa against our wills. But we are in 2013 now. Those laws that they have now are not working. Incarceration is not always the answer. There can be drug rehabilitation, like Mr. Holden, the Attorney General here in the United States of America. There can be community service. I'm not saying they should just go completely free. What I'm saying is complete incarceration and to lock them up and throw away the key and forget about them is unfair, and it's almost immoral.
It's inhuman. Go ahead and call it. Just call it what it is. It's inhuman. And there are some conditions that
just call it
inhuman.
Okay.
There are some conditions that have been deemed inhuman, which is the reason the state of California was ordered by the Supreme Court to release, I think it was 147%. It was an extremely high number of people. And what's funny, I think it was last week.
Yes,
I read
where the state of California left out close to 50%, maybe a little less of the prison population. They were still overcrowded.
Yeah, right. And so I also read this like recently, more recently than the, because I think the Supreme Court ordered the state of California to do that maybe 3 years ago, and I think like last week I heard that the state of California was not able to release them fast enough, okay, which was going to put them up against the possibility of being in contempt of court. Now I'm going to say that now that I haven't talked much about the work that I'm doing, but I will right now because it's at the fall. I suggest that we need to be prepared for a mass reentry of these offenders, of these citizens who have done their time or who have been deemed eligible to be released. Okay, I suggest that we need to start trying to get our communities together so that we can receive them. and receive them effectively, and receive them successfully, because that
the reentry. Mr. Holden did address the reentry.
Reentry there.
Yeah, he did. He addressed the reentry of people who have been incarcerated, put in prison for nonviolent offense. He did address the reentry of them into the community. He said something about education, I believe. I don't want to be wrong in what I'm saying, but I do remember he addressed that in his speech. I read his speech, and I've read the legislature, too, and I understand it to the best of my ability. He did address reentry. He did also say that he said something else. He said that he said that he has directed every attorney general to designate a prevention and reentry coordinator in his or her district. And also said that he and his colleagues, this is his words, this is Mr. Holden's words, his colleagues will work closely with state leaders and agencies and other partners, including members of the Federal Interagency Reentry Council and the American Bar Association. He also said that this is Attorney General Holden also said that there is a need to reform a broken system. And that's what I'm saying that you, Mr. Costin, have also said all along. He also said that in some cases incarceration could be avoided altogether through community service and drug rehabilitation.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a lot
of alternative sentencing that I don't think that we have totally examined. We haven't engaged the community in community sentencing or community supervision. We haven't engaged the community in that way. And so it's gonna take a change of mind. It's gonna take some open mind, some opening of minds. It's gonna take some opening of heart.
And it's gonna take a lot of prayer too. It's gonna take a lot of prayer.
Absolutely. Because there are just the same spirit that incarcerated at those ridiculous rates will release at those ridiculous rates for the same and in that same mean spirit. And so,
okay, they will. Wait a minute. I heard that. I understood that. You're saying
okay.
They will release people at the same rate at the same ridiculous rates that they incarcerated them at.
Yeah,
just for per meanness.
I think Mississippi may have been Louisiana, and Mississippi. One of those states down there tried to do that. And they were, and the governor tried to release a bunch of prisoners, not necessarily ex-offenders, but that governor was trying to release a ridiculous amount because of the mass incarceration discussion, and he was that judge, I mean that court, that governor was ordered not to do that. He wasn't allowed to do it. So like I said. You know, these guys were incarcerated, and like I said, from the onset, to set the precedent, we have to maintain, we have to hold we have to make sure that we don't forget that this whole. We're in a society that has a race problem, okay? And just about everything that is done, it has come down until we have actually gotten honest about our history, until we have gotten honest to a point where we are teaching our kids American history the way that it should, the way that in a way that empowers our kids. and not embarrass our kids, and I mean, it's honestly American history in detail. We're going to still have this rip current, if you will, of racist ideology and racist and mindset. So decisions are going to continue to be made, and oppositions are going to continue to be made. Everything that our president has done, and this being a part of what has happened under his watch, all of the other things happened from the Reagan administration all the way up to President Barack Obama. Nothing has been said about. Well, there was some revisiting of the anti-drug abuse law. They have been revisited, but they weren't changed to hurt more. Okay,
so changed to hurt more.
That included Clinton.
That included President Clinton.
Just to make sure we understand that, you know, although President Clinton played a mean saxophone, but, you know, on his watch, the drug, this war on drugs and all of this, a lot of this unfair sentencing was continued and allowed to continue. But President Barack Obama, on his watch, with Attorney General Holder, has this out there. We'll see what happens with it.
I'm praying for the best too. I'm praying that it's the beginning of the end of institutionalized slavery. That's what I'm going to call it, because I'm not saying people shouldn't go to prison for crimes. I have never said that. I never said drugs should be legal. But what I am saying, mass incarceration is wrong. You're taking away fathers and mothers from families. You're taking away, you're hurting parents, the people's parents. And you see what people are saying to themselves right now, no, probably somebody said, well, they shouldn't commit the crime. But even though you said, They shouldn't commit the crime. That's not the answer either.
We, as a people, have to go back
and educate our children about their history. We have to let them know that if they are in the criminal justice system, they are not going to always get fair treatment just simply because of their skin, because of just racist ideology.
That's you hit the nail on the head just now. It is a part of the solution. Don't do the crime if you don't want to do the time. Yeah, that is a part of the solution. However, the way that you see these numbers of those incarcerated, you would think that black people were the only ones committing these drug-involved crimes.
No.
Because
they're just about the only ones. No, I take that back. I'll reset it. They are the majority of the people being put in prison for these crimes, and that's the unfair. That's really the unfair part about it, because we make up what percentage of the population? 13-12% maybe is what you said, and we're making up 60-70%, 50% of the prison population, and America.
That was something else. That was completely different statistics. But yeah, we disproportionately represent the prison population. We're disproportionately represented in the prison population. Yeah. And
America represents almost 25% of the world's prison population.
Maybe
5% of the world's population? Okay. I know you probably got to go, so we're going to end this conversation. Thank you, Mr. Costin, for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. I thank you for taking the time to do this. And I hope to have you back one day when you're not too busy.
Yeah, Wakat and Michelle Alexander, Michael Tonry. I'm just trying to throw out some authors for people to consider reading, because we really need to read up on what we're talking about.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Costin.
You're welcome.
I'd also like to say this has nothing to do with nonviolent crimes, but I like to say, as a woman, as a Black American woman, I have to say this, that Black women are not always treated fairly by the criminal justice system. I can name some names that you probably have already seen on major television news stations like CNN, a lady such as Marissa Alexandra, who used to Stand Your Ground as a defense. No, that's not a nonviolent thing, but she is serving 20 years as a convicted felon, and she injured and killed no one. And she's also in the state of Florida. I like to talk about somebody else. She was one of my first guests on one of my earlier shows almost 4 years ago. Her name is Danielle Metz. Ms. Metz is serving 3 life sentences plus 20 years. She received that sentence in the state of Louisiana. I did shows on her before. I did 2 or 3 shows on her. She was convicted of a nonviolent crime. One of the crimes was conspiracy. She was 24 years old when she was sentenced to prison for 3 life sentences plus 20 years. She had 2 children at that time, 2 small children. Now I think it's been 22, maybe 23 years later, she's still in prison, and she was only 24 years old. And I'd like to say that she killed nor molested. She did not kill or molest anyone. I know that the philosophy is, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime, but it's still happening. The laws are in place, but doesn't make all the laws right and fair. Just as I said earlier in the conversation with Mr. Costin, teaching Blacks reading and writing was wrong. And I'm not forgetting the Latino people, but I said if you're teaching Blacks reading and writing was wrong. And now this law is unfair. And I'm not going to say it's completely 100% wrong, but it is very discriminatory, because other races of people are not being incarcerated for the same crimes at the same rate as we, as Black Americans, and, of course, the Latinos. And it's unfair and it's discriminatory. And I'm glad Mr. Eric Holden has done what he has done. I really hope for the best and pray for the best with what he said. I really hope change will come on President Barack Obama's administration, because it's wrong. And I know that's really all I can say. I mean, Black people are being imprisoned at such an alarming rate, are in prison right now serving time. And I like Mr. Costin said, they were somebody that, for meanness, they would release them, these mass people, at a high rate. They're not really ready. I guess I'm going to say it, that it's not ready for reentry. They need to be prepared for reentry into free society. Also, not just released to get back on the streets to do the same, to be hungry, homeless, without, so that way they won't be driven to repeat the same crimes over and over again, because that would undermine what Mr. Holden and President Barack Obama is trying to do. I thank you for listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Everyone, have a good night.
A special event can be very challenging and stressful at times. Our staff of professionals organizes your event down to every last detail, no matter what size. Our creativity and attention to detail turns your ordinary party into an extraordinary event. And Decline provides world-class service. We coordinate quality events. We can provide travel arrangements, accommodations, event sites, caterers, tours, photographers, transportation, hairstylists and makeup artists, daily itineraries, and pre-event information such as detailed maps, save-the-date cards, and invitations. Being a custom event planner means that we cater to you. It is our job to find the best possible way to present your event. We have been referred to as Dreamweavers.